Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a deep recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love.
For the Empowerment Hour here on Praise 107.9, presented by the Jacksonville Urban League and First Thursday Jacksonville. And now, here's your host, Dr. Richard Danforth of the Jacksonville Urban League and Larry Williams of First Thursday Jacksonville.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams with my co-host, Dr. Richard Danforth, president of Jacksonville Urban League, and Jarman Leitner, president of Harvest Intervention Mental Health Services in Jacksonville also. Welcome, guys, and it's a beautiful day. We're hoping that everyone is safe and healthy. How things going and what's going on in Jacksonville?
Jarman?
Yes, all right. I didn't know if you wanted to take it, Dr. Danforth. Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Everything on this end is appearing to be safer than what it is, just according to the reopening of the city, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But it's a great day. Just excited for another opportunity to share with our listeners.
Yeah, it's good on my end. Actually, I have been opening up the office just to look around. Other than that, we're working at home, and things are going quite well. We're just excited about seemingly the mayor is opening up the city. There's more traffic. People are shopping, and of course, the mall's opening, and so everyone seems to be happy in Jacksonville. We've had.
Have you been to the mall, Dr. Danforth?
Say again?
Have you been to the mall?
Not yet. I passed by, but I really don't need anything from the mall right now. I certainly don't want to pick up the COVID-19 out there.
I was going to say, a lot of people out there shopping are going to pick up something that they didn't want. So, but I understand that the mayor is ready to move into phase two if he hasn't already. And there's some questions about a lot of things that's going on with the COVID deal. But let's talk about the stimulus money that was available through the city of Jacksonville that the mayor and the city council made available. I understand that the 40,000 slots, was it 40,000? Or how many slots were there available for the $1,000 relief fund? Was it 40,000 or 4,000?
It's 40,000. 40,000 households, not 40,000 people, but that's per
house. 40,000 slots. Okay. We were told yesterday that by a city council member that those were already filled and that they have a waiting list, I believe, of like 1,500. And it was suggested that those 15, if you're still wanting to get on that waiting list in case there were duplicates or folks filed twice for that relief fund, is that what you all understood?
Yes, those 40,000 slots that are filled, they still have to go through the process, and some of those households may not qualify. So, yes, they are encouraging people to still apply and get on that wait list because you just don't know if you may be one of the ones who are actually awarded the stimulus money.
Yeah, I understand. You're quite correct. I understand there is a long waiting list, but we're still encouraging people to apply because there may be additional funds, and of course, all the people that applied may not necessarily be approved. So let's go through the process, and if you're not successful, then you know what you need to do the next time we get a stimulus situation.
And that information can be found on COJ.net. It can be found on the city's website, and all of the information with all of the requirements and the documentation that you need to provide and the information that's approved is on there. And you have to have all that information correct in order to move forward.
Are the barber shops, beauty shops, and nail shops open?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I picked up a haircut. And I decided not to get my nails done, but the shops are open as long as only a certain number of people are in the shop at a certain time. But still, Larry and Jarman, I just can't imagine some of the places opening right now. We're in a hurry to make some money. I hope it doesn't come back to bite us.
Well, and that appears to be the rationale nationwide, Dr. Danforth. Most of the states that are rushing to reopen are doing it strictly for the economic part of it, and it appears that some are rushing. With that still have cases of the virus, people testing positive and the deaths continuing to rise, which, to me signals that perhaps they should take slow it down a bit. I'd rather have, a slower working economy than more deaths. But that's my personal deal. I'm more concerned about people's lives than the economy. And also, I'm looking at the fact that we don't want to have, a resurgence of the virus. Once we get the numbers down, the last thing we need is to have another round of this this summer. And we know that the health experts are predicting that we will have a round of the COVID in the winter. So, I don't know what the rush is, but at the same time, I do know that folks want to make money.
And in addition to what Dr. Danforth mentioned about the salons currently being open in phase two, which was reported to start next week, it would include more capacity in the restaurants and retail stores and also allow the gyms to begin opening up. So that's just a part of what is going to be in addition to what has already opened currently. The beaches.
But with these things opening and are there regulations and guidelines to, for sanitary sanitizing the places and using, as folks come and go, it would appear to me, I've seen things here in Seattle as they're preparing that if you go in and try on some clothing or look at some clothing, that piece of clothing has to be desanitized.
Are you serious?
I did see a report where in certain states, I have not read what the guidelines are, particularly in Jacksonville or Florida.
You know, when we're talking about these gyms and things opening, I know that in Florida, it was mentioned when they were opening up some of the places that they had to have some type of what you call it, the test where you see if folks have a fever or something, is that
visualized?
No, I tell you, let me say, it's going to be very difficult to really control the behaviors of people once you open up a facility. They're indicating that you can have only a certain number in the restaurant at a certain time. We may start off abiding by the various rules, et cetera, but you'll eventually see a rush because Americans really are not comfortable with rules, you know, unless they're benefiting them.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that because we're going to talk about rules and the violation of rules when we come back after this music break, because we do have a guest speaker, Larry. We have a guest speaker that we're going to bring on in our next segment.
Okay. All right. Yes. So this is Praise 107.9 FM, the Empowerment Hour. We'll be back after this music break.
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience.
I may not be who you are, may not do what you do. If you're in this truck, I got a message for you.
Welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams with my co-host, Dr. Richard Danford of the Urban League and Jarman Leitner of Harvest Intervention Mental Health Services. And we have a special guest team joining us from Burke County, Waynesboro, Georgia, is Sheriff Alfonso Williams. And welcome, Sheriff, and thank you for joining us to discuss the Ahmaud Arbery case that drew national and international attention over the past couple of weeks. Welcome, and can you give us some updates about what's going on and how you got involved? I know that just to give our listeners a little bit of background, I'm originally from Burke County, Waynesboro, and as I understand it, that the family is from in Burke County as well, and I understand also that you've been working with the family and trying to help them with a number of their needs and so forth. So welcome, and let's talk about, tell us about what's going on there in Burke County.
Hey, Larry, thank you so much for having me, and thank you to the co-hosts here today. We are appreciative of the opportunity to talk about Ahmaud Arbery and his family. They are going through a very tough time with this unjustified killing, and we're working hard to push the hate crimes legislation that was held up this past session. When the Georgia General Assembly reconvenes on June 6th, we're hoping that this will be at the top of the agenda to get this hate crimes legislation through. That is likely to be renamed the Ahmaud Arbery hate crimes legislation or bill. And Wanda Cooper Jones, the mother to the victim, lives or is originally from Burke County and has some very close family and connections here in Burke County still. As you well know, Ahmaud is buried in the New Springfield Baptist Church Cemetery here in the county. And we have increased security and patrols around the homes of the families and the church to prevent any malicious activity from going on. The family has a GoFundMe account on their Facebook. I Run With Maud, M-A-U-D, I Run With Maud. Is where you can find that information. And I spoke with the family just before coming on to let them know that that you're shining a spotlight on this from Seattle and Jacksonville and to Burke County. And they are very appreciative of the spotlight that this is getting and so rightfully deserved. We're one of four states without this hate crimes legislation. We hope to get that through.
So you said that this hate crime legislation is expected to be revisited when the Georgia State Legislature reconvenes in June?
That is right. It's my understanding that the governor is behind this and wants it done, so I anticipate there won't be a holdup like there was this last session, and we hope to see that come to fruition.
Sheriff, can you tell us the difference in this particular murder and the Trayvon Martin situation with the Stand Your Ground law? And I understand in Georgia that there's a Stand Your Ground law. So is there some similarity, or what do you see between those two cases?
That's a good question, Doctor. I think the similarities are that they're both unjustified. They're both homicides, and that there should have been charges in both situations. And you're allowed to use reasonable force to prevent a forcible felony. In this situation, Ahmaud Arbery was not causing or had not committed a forcible felony, and you cannot use self-defense when you're the instigator. And from what I've seen, what I've read, what I've studied, what I've heard, it appears as though, and being a use of force expert, having taught use of force in police academies for three decades now, I just don't see where they were justified in committing this crime. And certainly in Georgia, one of the caveats to being able to claim self-defense is that you can't be the instigator. They obviously grabbed guns and got into their truck and went in after this jogger and they committed the felony, in my opinion, approaching him and with the weapons drawn and boxing him in, if you will, I think the felonies are on them.
Well, what's surprising, and I know, Jarman, you want to jump in, but what is really surprising is the number of law enforcement professionals that had to eventually recuse themselves because they were so interlinked together in this community. So it stands to reason that there may have been similar crimes like this in the past, but did not receive the same attention because there was no video of it.
Right. Well, you know, it's we thank God for the video. I've worked for I've headed three law enforcement agencies in the past three decades, and with each police agency, I require a body camera. Every officer in uniform is required to wear a body camera. They must have it on when there's interaction with the police. It's the only way to get trust and reliability and veracity with the public and just have a good relationship between police and community. It cuts out all the he said, she said. Now in this situation, this wasn't a police shooting, but video is good. It doesn't tell the entire story, but it certainly gives us a different perspective, and thank God we had video here. It's just very unfortunate that they had the video from day one, and it took several months to bring this case to an arrest, and that's the most unfortunate part here. It appears that I understand that the initial DA had to recuse himself because the one of the suspects worked in that office. Certainly the second DA should have gotten this done, and then we had to get the GBI to come in to investigate the circumstances. And now the Georgia Attorney General has asked the federal authorities to come in to look at the cover up, and so there were some improprieties here.
So Sheriff, they asked the federal government, that's the Department of Justice, to come in. And with their track record so far, it's dealing with the Trump administration and a number of folks that they are allowing to have retrials and getting away get out of jail free cards. I don't know whether that's going to be a plus or a minus.
I agree with you that I think we got national attention. I think you've certainly got the attention of the governor of the state of Georgia. The Georgia Bureau of Investigations, or the GBI, got involved, and we had an arrest 24 hours later. I think there's a clear message is being sent that due to the national attention this case has received, because of that video, because of the outrage, because of the media outlets like you that are shining a spotlight on this, that there is going to be more daylight than darkness.
All right. Well, we do thank you, Sheriff Alfonso Williams, and we're going to have to take a music break, and then we're going to come back and continue the conversation with you. This is the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9, and we'll be
the ultimate gospel experience. The new Praise 107.9.
Okay, welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams with my co-hosts, Dr. Richard Danford and Jarman Leitner, and our special guest, Sheriff Alfonso Williams of Burke County, Georgia. And Sheriff, thanks for coming on and shedding some light. It's our privilege to be able to help shed some light on this murder. And, you know, coming from, you know, my hometown and state, it's particularly alarming to me. But, you know, having grown up there in the 50s and 60s, I know what this type of the type of relationship between the communities is and has been. And thank God we have a sheriff like you in our county. So Jarman had some questions about the video. Jarman?
Yes, well, we understand that it's an ongoing investigation and that the video is what has allowed everybody to see part of what has happened in this particular case. Where does the person who, you know, who videoed what happened, like, are they considered to be a bystander? Are they an accomplice, you know, a participant in it? Like, is there any information right now for this particular person and their part in this?
I have followed the news. I'm glued to CNN a couple hours every night, probably like most of us, and that's all I know. I don't have any inside information. I've watched the interviews of the videographer and his fiance and his attorney, and you know, I'm just going. This is strictly opinion. I'm not convinced that we have heard the complete truth from him or that he is being completely transparent with what he's had to say. Doesn't appear to me to be remorseful. So I just haven't lent a whole lot of credibility to what he has to say. Now his fiance alleges that they did not know the suspects in this case or the perpetrators, that they had not met them. It's interesting that one would turn on a video and follow them in that regard without knowing what might come at the end and or what was about to happen. And so that's going to be largely based on what the videographer has to say and can they show a nexus or a connection between the two. We have in Georgia what we call party to a crime. In some states, they call it accessory or accessory after the fact. We have party to a crime in that if one aids or abets or connives or schemes to commit a crime, he is, in fact, guilty of the actual crime that's committed. But that's going to largely depend on what the suspects have to say about whether or not they knew the videographer, whether the videographer knew suspects, had they had any talk prior to the shooting, the killing. And that sort of thing. So it's all based on what they say.
So Sheriff, just a quick question, and we're going to let you go. But when there are news accounts that you know are coming out now that the McMichaels, the father in the group, was, you know, was a investigator for one of the departments, one of the attorney generals or some, I mean, county attorneys or something, and that for the past 8 years or so, that he was out of training. He had not, you know, continued his training. And as I understand it, and you being you know a trainer yourself, don't you have to do that annually?
That is correct. He was the dad that was arrested in this case was an investigator for the district attorney's office there in that Brunswick circuit. And he had left the job and retired. But after going back and looking at his post Peace Officer Standards and Training Council profile, that's our certification authority. They learned that he had missed some training along the way and had served a number of years as an investigator when he in fact did not have arrest authority because he had not completed the required yearly training to keep up his powers of arrest.
Yeah. And if he had gone back and done his training, he might've known that he was trying to make an illegal arrest from the beginning. If that was even the case that he was trying to make an arrest, I don't think that was the case because there's also information out there that younger McMichaels had an encounter with Ahmed an open house or a house, a lot or something that was being built. This is all, you know, it's a hearsay, but it is pretty factual and it is in the record. So, you know, sometimes folks have ulterior motives, and I think all of this will probably come out, you know, in the trial and as we get more information and get these people under oath to talk about what really happened.
So Sheriff Williams, can you speak to our listeners and give them some words, because, you know, people are concerned about the outcome of this situation and that justice may not be served yet again in another situation where a young Black male has been gunned down. So can you just speak to us, the community, about that and where we should be thinking, like, you know, how should we be responding right now?
I think we've got to talk to our children. We've got to tell them. My brother-in-law in Atlanta called me and said, "What can I do for this family?" I said, "You can pull your young boys together, your young Black boys, and sit them down and talk to them and tell them that although they may have friends who do not look like them and they come together and play in the basement, that life is not fair. Things are not equal. I used to run, I lived in a predominantly white neighborhood in 2005, 2006, 2004. I used to go jogging back when I was in shape, and my wife would say when it was cold, you should put on a skull cap. And I said, "You're crazy if you think I'm going to run through this neighborhood with a skull cap on. I'm just not going to do it." I was in law enforcement, and I taught at the police academy at the time. Right. We have to understand that things are not equal, and we have to be cautious about what we do. And this whole COVID-19 situation, can you imagine a Black person walking into a store with a mask on? The first prejudice thing that comes to mind, whether you're Black or white, is here's a Black man with a mask on. But if it's a white counterpart, you might not be so inclined to think that way. And so we've got to let the public know that we have to be careful. We have to be cognizant of what we're doing and that things are not equal. Just because we've had a Black sheriff or Black president, it doesn't mean that we all have same opportunities. And that's what we need to impress upon our people. But other than that, tell the young folks to stay respectful. That's not the case here. We don't have where he was disrespectful. But just know that there are people who are filled with hate and have malicious and abandoned and malignant hearts. And we just we've got to be ever so vigilant and careful about what we do.
Sheriff Williams, thank you so much for coming on. We enjoyed you, and we'll hopefully have you back on again as this case matures and give our regards to the family and our condolences and let them know that we are keeping them in our prayers.
I'll do that, Larry. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jarman.
Thank you.
All right, this is the Empowerment Hour, Larry Williams with Dr. Richard Danford, Jarman Leitner. We're going to take a music break, and we'll be back.
The ultimate gospel experience, the new Praise 107.9. The new Praise 107.9.
This song is for everybody that feel you've been skipped over. God's getting ready to call your name. JP, help me say my name on it.
We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams with my co-host, Dr. Stanford of the Urban League in Jacksonville, and Jarman Leichner, president of Harper's Intervention Mental Health Services in Jacksonville. And we had a really good conversation with Sheriff Alfonso Williams of the Burke County Sheriff Department in Georgia. And we wanted to couple topics here in this last segment. One is the JEA and what's going on there, and then talking about the what the public schools are going to look like in the fall. So, Dr. Danford, what's happening over at JEA? What do we know, and what do we think we know?
Well, that's a $64,000 question in terms of what we know. We know what we've read in the paper. We also know that Mike Elroy is back in the saddle.
Well, that's good.
And so there's everyone seems to be upbeat because he had quite a track record during his tenure. So I can imagine that under his leadership over the next however long he will serve as CEO, he'll right the ship. Apparently, Zahn, the past CEO, turn the ship in a direction that that turned out not to be a good direction. It's almost like run like if you're on a ship running aground.
You're right. It's like the Titanic, huh?
Yes, but it's very interesting because obviously there are some challenges, but it's not as bad as what Zahn made us believe that JEA was drowning in. And we had to sell it, but we now know that they wanted to sell it because, you know, about 30 administrators over there were poised to gain a significant windfall from the people of Jacksonville through this JEA sale.
Wow. Yeah. So you know, I guess that now it's up to the City Council and other government entities to investigate and find out exactly what really happened and try to shed some light on you know, how did we get to that point?
Right, but the City Council obviously really can't do a whole lot. I think they're submitting a bill, you know, to determine the bonuses for JEA. So. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at some other things, but the council really cannot do anything. This is a federal case now. And so, you know, to a certain degree, the council is out of that portion of it.
Yeah, but I think the council still owes the public, you know, some information and some research into how did it get to that point. You know, they still are accountable to the citizens, and they were by de facto, you know, part of the approval process of getting it to that point and had some oversight in it. I understand that the mayor had the majority of it, but they were still there and we need some accountability.
Well, I guess the interesting thing about this debacle is how far up the administrative chain you know, was their involvement.
Right.
And I don't think the council can figure that out. That will it's a federal investigation. So they will determine who was involved and at the highest level who was involved. And so we have I believe it's the CAO over there that agreed to go testify before the council.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll get back to them and see next week and see what has transpired. And we need to get, you know, the lights are shining, as the sheriff said about the other deal, that the lights are on now. So, you know, I think we'll see a lot of things come running out of the cabinets. Jarman, public schools in Florida what does that look like for the fall? Are we going to have school in the fall? public schools opening?
Well, there is a lot of conversation surrounding what schools will look like in the fall for students. And in those conversations, the task force that they're proposing to work on this are going to look at things like adjusting possibly the class sizes and the times that the students would actually participate in recess and lunchtime and PE, maybe staggering the schedules, also changing the number of students on the buses when it comes to, you know, the students being actually in the building. In addition to that, they want to limit the visitors on campus, have rapid coronavirus testing for students and the families and staff, and then do those daily temperature checks. They're going to be cleaning protocols throughout the day, as well as protocols for using the face mask and any other protective gear. And again, the stages of talking about this and trying to come up with a plan. And they're also concerned about these students who may have any remaining learning gaps due to the COVID-19 pandemic and they're terming it COVID-19 academic slide. So they're not only the students who went into the pandemic already with the learning gap, but those who have fallen some because of that change and transition to home-based digital learning.
So it may be better to hold them back a year, Jama, with what we're seeing.
I think that information, Doc, is there's and we talked about this prior to this show, and some people are very satisfied with the results of the homeschooling and how this online teaching process has gone, and there are some students that I think didn't get as much out of it as possible, but you know, we have students all the time that are not getting the education that we want them to have. So you know, I don't think that we need to change the system as much as we need to make sure that those students that aren't getting the proper education, whether it's online or in person, have an opportunity to go to summer school or do whatever they need to do to catch back up. And if they need to be held back, it should be made on an individual student basis. That's my opinion.
Well, and I agree with you, Larry, because there is still some talk about whether students will come back on campus or whether there's going to be a combination of on-campus classes and the virtual learning. And you're right. It doesn't matter which setting they're in, as long as the support is there for each child in order for them to excel, that's the opportunity that they will be given, whether they're in their home environment and have that support, or whether they're in the classroom and have that support from that teacher. So
you mentioned that they were going to have some type of testing. Was that the rapid testing deal? And I'm looking at an article in the USA Today right now that says that the FDA has has told the White House that those tests are proven to be, if you get a positive test, that sometimes they're proven, if you go back and get the secondary test, it's a negative. The first test is negative and the second test is positive. So they're recommending that test is not dependable. So the White House is using it, doesn't mean that it's a good test.
Gotcha. Correct. And that's still something that they are, I guess, working through right now as they try to develop the plan for the students in this upcoming.
Okay. All right. So this is Praise 107.9. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in this Saturday morning, and look forward to visiting with you again. We hope that you enjoyed our special guests, and I want to thank Dr. Danford, Jarman Leitner, and Roger behind the scenes making everything happen. And we'll see you next. Talk to you next Saturday morning, 8 a.m. on Praise 107.9 FM, the Empowerment Hour.